Is the struggle.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the NAACP kickoff to Black History Month on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library in Vancouver, Washington. The NAACP kickoff to Black History Month features performances from African drummers, actors and storytellers, artist talks, a presentation by the Buffalo Soldiers of Fort Vancouver, and much more. Again, that's the NAACP kickoff to Black History on Saturday, January 26th at 1 p.m. at the Fort Vancouver Library, 901 C Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. I am lucky enough this week to be speaking with Jenna and Muhammad. They are activists in the BDS movement. BDS, or Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, started in 2005, springing from Palestinian civil society that cried out to the rest of the world that the occupation had not slowed down by any means, and that depending on the UN, depending on diplomatic relationships, everything that had been tried since 1948 had not been successful. And the call directly from civil society to the rest of the world to fight to boycott, divest, and sanction the Israeli government until they meet their demands and that Palestinians can have equal rights in their own indigenous lands became the rally cry. People all over the world sprang into action and answered with a resounding yes. We will stand in solidarity with you. We'll fight in solidarity with you. And they've been doing it ever since. And two of the people who have been doing it best, in my humble opinion, are my guests, Jenna and Muhammad. Please say a little bit about yourselves and how you relate to the struggle. Jenna.
Hello. My name is Jenna, and I'm a Palestinian American currently living in Portland, Oregon. I also grew up here. And basically, I became a part of this movement as part of sort of discovering my identity as a Palestinian. I realized that this history of struggle for liberation had been happening for decades now, since 1948, since the Nakba. And I came into BDS through my activism at Portland State University through Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights.
Shout out, love y'all.
Woo. And now, since graduating, I'm currently a member of Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, also here in Portland, Oregon. And I've been just trying to raise awareness about Palestine, the issues that we face here in Palestine, as well as connecting it to the struggles that we face here.
Beautiful. So on the struggle, we always make sure to parse out terms and acronyms so that everybody knows.
Yes.
So you did say super, thank you, Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. You also said the Nakba.
Yes.
And please say what the Nakba is.
The Nakba is in Arabic, it translates to English as the disaster or the catastrophe. And it basically is a reference to the displacement of over 800,000 Palestinians from their homes in Palestine and the ethnic cleansing that occurred from about 1947 to 1949, as well as obviously it didn't end. It's happening right now. And it's just referencing the memories of the violence that happened during that time.
Thank you. Amen.
Hey, Alyssa. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
So my name is Mohammed Nabil. I grew up I was born and raised in the Gaza Strip, Palestine. And coming to this movement is actually not something that I had the pleasure or like the honor of have the choice to join. I was born into this.
Mm.
Growing up in Gaza, you know, like since early ages, like all what I remember is the oppression of the Israeli occupation. Like one of the scenes that I cannot forget in my life is walking out of my elementary school and finding a tank literally at the top of the street, and you can see it, and it's just that one of the scenes that terrifies you. So growing up and starting to realizing what that means and what it means to be a Palestinian the hard way by having some of your friends being murdered, some of your friends being injured, and by 2008, which is like one of the most major operations in the Gaza Strip history, which is like the 2008 Operation Castled, I was there at that time. I was like going from my high school to home, and suddenly the first bomb happened, and basically the Israelis has basically shocked the entire Gaza Strip at the same time at noon with like F-16 missiles. And everybody at that moment in Gaza Strip, the least inconvenience, if you want to say, is they couldn't hear anything for the next 5 minutes. So fast forward, like I end up coming here to the US in 2012 to study for my master's degree. I start looking around like what to do as a Palestinian here,
mm-hmm.
and how can I tell my message, but at the same time not fall into the normalization scene.
Yeah.
Because it's not about the Israelis and the Palestinians. It's about the Palestinian rights of existence and return and dignity and equality. So I start looking in my community about like ways to join in, and the first venue that I found, which is, I'm so proud to be in, is joining Super at PSU, Portland State University.
Yay. Yay.
So, and basically it went uphill from there, you know. I learned a lot through working with Super and in the boycott, divestment, and movement about how to further improve, like how I tell my message.
Okay.
But at the same time, learning a lot about other struggles and like how it's connected to us here.
So, a couple of things. Well, firstly, thank you for that.
Yep.
And I'm sorry for like you lost people and you've seen people struggle, and I'm sorry that you've had to see that and experience that.
So, yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned right of return,
mm-hmm.
which is very important here. So for someone that is not already familiar and they hear you say, we don't have the right to return, can you say what that means, please?
So the right of return is actually a term that's been developed in the United Nations in 1948 as like a ramification of the Nakba, which Jenna just described. Is the United Nations came together and was like, what should we do with these hundreds and thousands of people who are displaced?
Yes.
Because like the people did not just like displace from a place to another place in Palestine, but they've been scattered all over the world. So the United Nations decided to create the Right of Return Act. And what that means is that every Palestinian who's been displaced from their homeland anywhere in the world, they and their descendants have the right to return to their homeland or being compensated if they choose to.
Yes.
And that's a right being guaranteed by the international law,
mm-hmm.
the United Nations, and every nation that basically is member of the United Nations.
Yeah.
So that's what we mean when we say the right of return.
And yet you don't have it.
Yeah, we don't have it.
It's very important to name that. That the consensus is clear. This is not controversial in the international sense. Like the globe,
mm-hmm.
right? Civil society around the globe, the United Nations around the globe recognize Palestinian right of return. You were expelled from your homes, or your parents, your grandparents, right, were expelled from their homes. And the reason that the emblem of the right of return is a key,
mm-hmm.
right, is because people fully anticipated to be able to come back and brought their house keys with them and locked their doors.
Exactly. Yeah.
and they have not been able to return yet. It's very important. I think it shows how egregious this is.
Yeah, it definitely is, especially for Palestinian Americans like myself. It's very difficult to go back. Either we are humiliated when we cross the border,
mm-hmm.
or we're just flat out deported. So we're even denied that entrance or meant to feel ashamed that we even wanted to see, you know, our homeland.
Yeah.
And just to add, you know, it's not just like the Palestinians are not just denied the right of return, which is the eternal right that I was just talking about, but also Palestinians like me who left for a reason to study or to live somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
even me right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm not able to go easily to my homeland, to Gaza Strip. You know, like the Gaza Strip has been under siege for about 11 years right now, and the only two gates are like the Israeli gate from the north and the Egyptian gate from the south. And both of these gates are impossible to cross. So that's one of the other things that, like, when I talk about the right of return, I feel like I'm talking about two non-splittable things. You know, it's like it's an ongoing thing. And what's going on right now in Gaza, I'm not sure if we want to talk about it right now, but the Great March of Return,
we're gonna get there,
is like an... It's a symbol that this right is never dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, something that you mentioned in your introduction was Super as well. Again, Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. which locally is at Portland State University and has done incredible work. I just want to say that SUPER is part of an international movement of student activists that want to end the occupation. And there are many other groups that will usually go by the name SJP.
Yes, yeah, Students for Justice.
Yeah, Students for Justice in Boston. Yeah. And it's full of socialists, so thanks for burying the lead there. Yeah. Any socialist worth their salt in 2019 had better be in lockstep with ending the occupation and Palestinian equal rights. And speaking about Palestinian equal rights, I was hoping that we could talk about the three main goals or demands of BDS. So we talked about the right of return. Then there's also Palestinian equal rights. If you could tease that out a bit, talk about the equal rights that are being denied now that we're striving for, and then talk about the last goal of BDS.
Yeah, so in Israel right now, obviously it's an apartheid system, so you sort of have three separate things happening at the same time. So you have Palestinians in the Gaza Strip who are basically in an open-air prison. You have, you know, Palestinians living in the borders of Israel, and then you have Palestinians in the West Bank. And then what it sort of addresses is basically Palestinians are denied the right to exist. In, you know, Gaza, they're denied food, water, electricity, you know, the basic things that you need to live.
Basic sanitation.
Yeah, you know, things that we take for granted here. And then in sort of Israel proper, you have Palestinians who face, I think it's 33...
About 50. 50
or more now laws that discriminate against them, deny them housing, you know, a variety of other things. And then that is even more compounded by the Nation State Act that was passed in Israel, which basically demoted, you know, Arabic as an official language. And then you have Palestinians in the West Bank who face checkpoints, home demolitions, as well as other, like, similar issues to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, which is denial of electricity, water, food, and resources to basically live their lives.
Yeah, and going on the same theme of, like why we're talking about Israel as an apartheid state, because, so, if you look at the map of the West Bank, and you will feel like it's a calendar, because, like, literally the wall is compressing the Palestinian territories into a little surrounded areas that basically it's impossible to be connected together. People are being divided from their lands, their families, their schools, their hospitals, etc. And in the Israeli territories, you have Palestinians having been denied to go to school at the age of 18, because Israel has like a mandatory 2 years of service for everybody to go and serve in the Israeli army. The Palestinian people in Israel denies going, like cannot, don't want to go and serve in that.
Sure.
So what the Israeli is doing to combat that is literally denying them to go to university until they reach the age which is the 20 years old to be able to cross to go to the university. So there's 2 years of like dictated useless 2 years for the Palestinian people, and they have to struggle
because they won't serve.
They won't serve in the
Israeli
military
army.
Yeah,
right.
So and in the Gaza Strip, which is a history of itself, you know, being denied movement, electricity, medical attention. Like, for example, like the Gaza Strip, there's 2 million people there only being served by one MRI machine. Let that thing sink for a moment, you know? Like, if you want to go and have an MRI, you might face 8 month delay.
And you might die in those 8 months.
And people actually died in those 8 months. So when we're talking about an apartheid state, we're not just like talking slogans. Just like if you...
So can we talk about in Portland what BDS work has looked like since the movement started?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of stuff for a while, mostly from my experience through Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, SUPER. And that began with the first campaign that we tried to do, which is the New Seasons campaign. And that was when...
The friendliest store in town.
I know.
Yeah. So busting their union.
Right.
Okay.
And so what our ask was is that we wanted them to remove products that had connection to the Israeli occupation. And we thought, because they're like this neighborhood store, sure, this local grocery store, that they would be totally okay with that, because in the past they had taken a political stance on certain issues, like not selling, I think it was like an energy drink where the CEO was very homophobic. Mm-hmm. They don't sell cigarettes there. Mm-hmm. So they had made...
Yeah, they have the rainbow flag outside,
right,
of all their stores.
Right. So they had, yeah, made socially conscious decisions. Yeah. And so we put them to task and we're like, hey,
sure,
take this off your shelf. Mm-hmm. And that culminated in a flash mob that we did, and you can watch it on YouTube.
It's fabulous. It's great. Iconic, honestly.
It's very iconic.
Yeah, it's my favorite video.
It is. Yes, where we were like, take this stuff off your shelves, you know, help us reach our goal of ending the occupation. And it turns out that was probably just like the beginning of New Seasons, you know, becoming more corporatized. Yeah. And they were like, no, go away. And then
consumer choice. Let the, right, consumers choose.
Yeah, let the consumers choose. Decide. Mm-hmm. And that campaign, unfortunately, was unsuccessful. And we turned to something that a lot of SJPs across the country have been doing, which is asking their universities to divest from their funds that are connected to the Israeli occupation. Yes. And this was a campaign that we
investment
had,
portfolio.
Investment portfolio, mm-hmm, yeah. And that was something that we had been working on, I think, since the beginning of SUPER. We wanted to bring this to the student council and have them vote on it. And that started about a 9-month or year and a half process, I think, of bringing this legislation to the student council and having them vote on it. And at the time, we had a very progressive council, which we were very fortunate. We knew people who would support us throughout this whole process. And we really thought we were going to get the votes that first time around. Unfortunately, with student politics, student group politics, the Israeli student groups on campus throughout the whole process tried to prevent this vote from happening. Yeah. So they kept trying to find weird Roberts rules that we had violated, a whole bunch of stuff that just, they wanted to stop the process. And then we ended up having our first hearing, which was pretty dramatic, I would say. There's a group called Stand With Us, which is a pro-Israel organization, and they spend a lot of money actually on funding student groups, pro-Israeli student groups on campus, to basically counteract all the work that SJPs and SUPERs do. Mm-hmm. And what they had done is put a call out for all the Pacific Northwest to come to Portland State University, mm-hmm, to counteract this legislation. Mm-hmm. And that's where we heard, I think, probably some of the most vile, racist, Islamophobic, you know, comments that I personally have heard in my life.
Naked.
That were, yeah, they were pretty shameless, yeah, about what they said.
They didn't even pretend to, yeah, be liberal Zionists,
nope,
that just want peace.
Nope.
No. It was,
yeah. And I, yeah, think that actually was a detriment to them. I don't think they were expecting people to say,
yeah,
that much vile thing.
When you lay down with, yeah, right wingers,
yep,
anything can happen.
Yeah. And that's what happened. And so, unfortunately, their tactics did work that first time we had our legislation heard. And it ended up being tabled until the next academic year. We were lucky again to have another progressive council with mm-hmm. people who we knew were on it. And they continued the same tactics, which was to prevent this democratic process from happening. And we were able to use that tool against them because we could just say now, we just want to vote on this. Like, why are you
stalling?
Why are you stalling? Yeah. Like, what's the big deal? Why can't we vote on this?
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being, I think they realized that it was a losing battle at that point, because when the legislation passed, barely any of them actually showed up to even defend themselves.
It's important.
And it passed.
So there you have it. And then at the city level?
At the city level, basically, we a group of like the community organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace, Offer, Super, Unitarian Universalist, and other Palestine solidarity groups from like the faith community came together, formed like a collaborative basically called Occupation Free Portland, and they decided to go to the city council with a similar bill to ask the city of Portland to divest from or remove or like put the four companies basically, Hewlett Packard and G4S and Motorola Solution and Caterpillar,
mm-hmm.
basically put them on the do not buy list.
Yes.
So the city of Portland have like what do you call it, an investment responsibility, like social responsibility investment committee.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the Occupation Free Portland groups went through the process of like going to the Social Responsible Investment Committee and presented our bill. We went through the process, we talked the Israeli side first. The first hearing, I remember, it was like fully packed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next hearing, when they realized that they have nothing to do with us.
Right.
Like they we are presenting facts, they're talking about two people.
Yes.
And we're not talking about two people, we're talking about facts on the ground, and these companies are in actual violation of all the criterias of like the do not buy list.
Yep.
Or the socially responsible investment.
Mm-hmm.
Like violation of the human rights, violation of the environment, violation of like the workers, the violation of like using the fossil fuel and. So we best like to be on the do not buy list recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to the city council afterwards.
Yeah.
After a long battle, the city council, and like I remember that day because like we spent about 3 hours talking about Palestine in the city of Portland Hall. That's amazing.
And
that's
on its
that's
own.
unheard uh-huh. of by itself, you uh-huh. know, like listening to it, listening to people talking about Palestine. If you hear about the same thing that happened actually at PSU, which is like people on our side talking on like the Palestinian rights side,
mm-hmm.
talking about an actual violations,
mm-hmm.
facts on the ground, everything by the book.
Mm-hmm.
On the Israeli side, or like the people who are against this bill, they will be like, the Palestinian people are anti-Semitic. And like that's one of the things, like you're going to a very different thing here, because like among us, actual Jewish people, you know, it's not that like we're completely being like, oh, put so many people in one basket. It's not like that.
Right.
So
with not a bad word to say about Jewish people.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
To
note.
It's different, you know, like we're talking about an actual facts on the ground,
yeah.
committed by the state of Israel.
Yeah.
So with all of the battling, we actually let the city of Portland to vote temporarily to divest from every single armed company.
Mm-hmm.
So basically we didn't manage to let them divest like from Hewlett Packard and, but we basically we're successful from any company that invests in armed forces, mm-hmm. which is a big victory.
Sure.
And in my opinion, the biggest victory is to go to the city council of the city that I live in mm-hmm. and hear about my place, my country, and hear about it in a way that's not barbaric.
Okay. We know that the struggle continues locally yep. as well. So Leupold and Stevens.
Actually, that's an amazing one, you know, because like, everybody here loves like the Blazers mm-hmm. and loves the, you know, like the team. It's mm-hmm. like an amazing team. I love basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that the Blazers like have a section in their game, which is like the hometown hero.
Yes.
Which is honoring the veterans of the American Army. And it's an amazing thing, you know, like to honor the people who are injured. You know, mm-hmm. I have a different thought about like the army itself, but you know, like we should honor the people who's been injured yeah. and we should take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
We found out that this segment of the game of the advertisement is sponsored by a company called Leupold and Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
When you look in Leupold and Stevens, like basically they are sponsored of the stethoscope that's on the guns, and also like they provide equipments for like camping and
mm-hmm.
so basically they are the one of the main sponsors of the people of the supporting that piece of like the stethoscope of the gun to the Israeli army
mm-hmm.
and there is an actual
so that
footage.
Sharpshooters can be sharper
exactly yes, so yes. basically it's like an important for the sniper to be mm-hmm. able to shoot accurately.
Yeah.
And there is a documentation that these stethoscopes has been used during the combating of the Great March of Return
mm-hmm.
when the movement of the embassy, the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem
mm-hmm.
and about like tenths of thousands of people from Gaza basically were on the border and being shot and cherry picked
mm-hmm.
by the Israeli sniper
mm-hmm.
and on TV, and nobody was listening.
Sure.
So as people who love the Blazers, and I cannot stand with them when they keep their sponsorship with Leupold and Stevens
mm-hmm.
because Leupold and Stevens, in my opinion, is killing my people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my opinion. It's actually a fact. It's killing my people and I cannot stand with it.
Yeah.
So the Democratic Socialist of America,
yeah.
the DSA mm-hmm. chapter of Portland, is leading a campaign to basically tell the Blazers to boycott from Leupold and Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
They can keep the segment, but they cannot continue support companies that sponsor the killing of the Palestinian people.
Yeah. For this, there's been a lot of deaf ears, not deaf ears, but rather people have been choosing not to listen to them. And there was an escalation where there was a comrade in DSA who got on screen with the mascot. And
that was amazing.
And
yeah.
opened
and
up his jacket.
And they tilted the camera.
Oh, yes.
They tilted the camera.
So that said, and the relationship with Leupold and Stevens. So it got a lot of people to pay attention. And the fight is not over. DSA is not giving up, and you know, no one else that is.
Yeah, we're not giving up because
it's
like,
not over.
It has to end, you mm-hmm. know. Like, and so many people. Like I was like in one of the peace and justice fairs in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and people come to us and say, like, hey, what can we do? I'm here, blah, blah, blah. Call the Blazers. Tell mm-hmm. them to end this because it's not about one group of people. Because, like, if one of us is injured, all of us is injured.
Sure.
So that's what I told people for this specific campaign mm-hmm. is, like, call the Blazers. And I'm telling you, Portland, now, call the Blazers and tell them to end this.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up an injury to one is an injury to all. That's a coined phrase by the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World. If I can just have a minute to shout out all of my friends and comrades in the IWW, people who support them, people who use the house for their meetings. The windows were busted and there was spray paint vandalism on their building that said, you know, like, down with Antifa and smash communism and all of that. And I want people to understand the enormity of this, that this is taken directly out of the fascist playbook, that this is part of their escalations, right? After they've normalized themselves and their groups, they move on to trying to squash people who would stand against them as they attempt to come to power. And the IWW now in Portland and for more than 100 years globally has been at the center of very important struggles, not just for workers' rights, but for human dignity, period. IWW has also signed on to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions list, and so as well as DSA and many of the other groups who we bring up today. I think that it's just important to bring that in. So you talked about the March of Return, Mohammed, and you talk about the provocation of the U.S. moving its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And please talk about why that is such a provocation.
So there's an important thing. So historically speaking, the U.S. presented itself as a mediator for peace. Mm-hmm. And it's been coined by, like, the like, basically by signing the peace agreement with Oslo in 1948 and in Camp David and in the White House with Yasser Arafat and the Israeli side. So, and since basically since the introduction of, like, moving, like, the law to move the Israeli embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, every American president since 1980 or 1984 is extending that deadline every 6 months. So, and that's basically how America keeps, like, some water in its face regarding, like, how to be a peace mediator for the Israelis and Palestinians. So when with Mr. 45 come to power, he basically decides to flip the table and basically says, like, I'm going head on supporting the Israeli cause, and I'm moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. So some people will say, like, it's a place, what's wrong with it? So there's two things. So Jerusalem is an important segment of why the struggle is still going on right now. You know, like, the Palestinian people view the city of Jerusalem as their eternal capital. The Israelis on the other side, they want to have Jerusalem as their capital. Nobody in the world since 1948 till now had the courage to tackle this issue, and everybody put it on the side. Because it's a very significant part of, like, the Israeli question, Israeli-Palestinian question. Because Jerusalem is significant because of its religious history with Muslim, Jewish, and Christian, and people from these religions and more have been living in the city since before the existence of, like,
thousands of years,
the Israel, you know, like, thousands of years, and nobody can combat that. So, in the political spectrum, Jerusalem is a problem for the Israelis. Because they want to flip that page, basically, if you want to say it in a simple,
Totally occupy it.
You know, just like, so they've been surrounding it by the wall and the settlements, making the people of Jerusalem's lives disastrous, like to a degree that there is an actual law talking about the 50 laws of like discrimination against mm-hmm. the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. There is a law that says for the people of Jerusalem that you cannot live in Jerusalem unless Jerusalem is the center of your life. What that means, mm-hmm. that the Israeli army can come to your home, open the door, and go to your bed, feel the mattress. If the mattress is not warm, Jerusalem is not the center of your life. Open your fridge. If the fridge has not food that's like
fresh,
mm-hmm. basically Jerusalem is not the center of your life. Mm-hmm. So if you study in the West Bank and you have to go cross the checkpoints, go hope the wall is like not in your way, mm-hmm. and go to your school and come back, and if you decide to go and live 3 days a week in your relative in the West Bank, that means Jerusalem is not the center of your life. So the people of Jerusalem in Jerusalem considered a permanent resident.
Yes.
That's a mind-blowing by itself. Yes. You know, it's
very extreme.
Like you're living in the city that you've never known another city mm-hmm. to live in that's called yours, and you are actually a permanent resident. Mm-hmm. And if the Jerusalem is not the center of your life, you lose that residency.
You have to go. Mm-hmm.
And if you lost that residency, you're stateless. Mm-hmm. Like by the like freaky laws of like the Oslo Accords that's been imposed on the Palestinian people, you cannot go and move your residence to the West Bank. Mm-hmm. And because of the Israeli laws, which is like a complete apartheid laws, if you moved from Jerusalem, you cannot live and reside in Israel. Mm-hmm. So you've basically rendered stateless. So Israel, since the beginning of its establishment, is trying to have and grab that international recognition that Jerusalem is their capital.
Sure.
And Trump came and basically gave it to them on a golden plate.
Sure.
And I will never forget that scene with, I think Jared Kushner was reading the declaration. Jared Kushner mm-hmm. was reading the declaration.
That's Trump's son-in-law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was like on the TVs, like all the TVs, like CNN, CNBC, whatever, and like Sky News and BBC, they have that like mind-blowing thing is like Jared Kushner in a square reading the declaration of like moving the embassy.
And at the same time,
right next to it, another square of the people in Gaza being murdered by gunshot. And at guns, at like by basically being cherry picked mm-hmm. and
by
killed.
Snipers.
Yeah, and their policy is shoot to kill, by the way. So that's like basically tell you in a snapshot mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. how is the world is viewing this mm-hmm. and how cold hearted everyone is basically. Like, how can you continue doing this while people at the same time, at the same second, being killed by the hundreds?
Yeah.
At that day, more than 150 Palestinian people have died. About more than 2,000 people have been injured in that single day.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's the provocation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you realize like how much injustice the Palestinian people are under mm-hmm. and like how much injustice we as a people, as an organizers and as activists, we have to go through in order to achieve our missions.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Okay. About the March of Return, if we don't come back to this, I just want to say how much of a model for people who continue to fight under some of the most brutal circumstances, that even then Palestinians did not leave. They did not leave, they stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So they continue to fight. I wanted to bring out two things that you said in Jerusalem. The wall and the settlements.
Yep.
Just so that people can know what that means. Can you talk about the wall? And can you talk about settlements, what they are and what function they carry, please?
So there's the wall is basically, I feel like it should, Trump is viewing it as like the prototype of like the great American wall that he wants to build, and he will not build it. So it's basically a wall that's annexing across the Palestinian land in the West Bank and all around the Gaza Strip.
Mm-hmm.
That wall basically is annexing to the Israeli side more than 25% of the size of the West Bank, which is considered Palestinian territories under the international law.
Mm-hmm.
And that wall is considered by the International Criminal Court in La Haye as illegal. So that wall basically destroys so much of the Palestinian farmlands, like lots, like thousands of like olive trees, orange trees have been destroyed to build that wall.
Mm-hmm.
Divided the people, the houses and their backyards, dividing the people from going and visiting their relative.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine like before the wall, yeah, mm-hmm. going kids. The school, mm-hmm. hospitals, mosques, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine like one of the stories that's been circling around about Palestine, which is like one of the villages, I think it's Bal'in, is like people who used to go with a 5 minutes walk to go and visit their grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have to go through a loop that cost them 45 minutes without a checkpoint interruption,
mm-hmm.
to go and visit the same grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a story that's been common across the West Bank because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to note also, like, not only does this land take away, or the wall take away this land, but it's also a resource grab. A lot of the where the wall sort of goes into the West Bank is where aquifers are.
Yeah.
So you have issues of water, which, you know, in the Middle East and Palestine is very precious. And so it's a way to control resources and prevent Palestinians from having water. And then if you go to like the settlements and, you know, you have Israeli only roads,
mm-hmm.
that connect, you know, settlements, settlement A to settlement B to settlement C, Palestinians can't drive on those roads. And like Mohammed said, you have to go through this really roundabout way or through multiple checkpoints. And the point is to make this a daily humiliation for Palestinians. You're humiliated, you know, not only when you try and get, you know, water, but you're humiliated trying to go to school. And this starts at a young age for, you know, Palestinian kids who just want to educate themselves. They're made to feel ashamed to the point that they probably don't want to go to school anymore. And the whole point of the wall, the settlements, is to make Palestinians want to leave.
Yeah.
Huh?
And that's part of the process of ethnic cleansing.
Yes.
Yeah, and speaking of like the settlements also, it's so what they call it is like a satellite cities, mm-hmm. of connecting, like, so the Israeli government makes these settlements and offer a subsidized housing. For the Israeli people to go and live there.
It's very tempting if you're poor.
Yeah. So
it's free
housing. If you are poor, you get like a very hard subsidized housing.
Mm-hmm.
You get like a very low interest loans. You get like all the programs that support your living as a person in these settlements. And also it brings the most fanatic people.
Yeah.
To go and move there.
Because they're looking forward to violence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go and just look at two houses that's less than 50 kilometers away from each other, one on in the West Bank in the city of Hebron, and in this case actually less than 30 or 25 mm-hmm. kilometers in a settlement across the street, is you will find like a house with swimming pool, with ongoing running water, mm-hmm. so much trees and so much lush mm-hmm. and greenery. While in the Palestinian house is they have to have gallons of water all over their house because the water does not come to them mm-hmm. but once a week. Mm-hmm. So that's a very, very ugly controversy that the Israeli government is subsidizing this. Mm-hmm. And to put insult to injury, so many factories, like for example the factory of SodaStream, speaking of BDS, has been manufacturing their SodaStream products in the settlements and selling it around the world as a made in Israel label. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most successful BDS campaigns, that basically having the Israelis have to move the SodaStream factories from the settlements to the actual Israel land, mm-hmm. which I have reservation about that, but at the same time that was like a big victory because
They wouldn't have done it without us.
Yeah, that's a common theme. And also recently Airbnb used to before advertise as houses on the settlements yeah. as like go and live in Judea and Samaria in Israel, yeah. which is completely playing with the ignorance of the world's people.
Yeah.
And advertise to them as like come and visit Israel, and you're actually visiting Palestine, visiting
the occupied
yeah. Palestine, mm-hmm. and contributing to exploiting this land and its people. Mm-hmm. So recently Airbnb decided to remove all of their listings from the settlements, and we commend them, and we ask every other company to do the same.
Absolutely.
And not to say like Airbnb is excused from its other violations, like we want them to continue to have a fair treatment to its people wherever they live and not exploit them. Mm-hmm. So good for this. Work on your other problems, Airbnb.
Shots fired. Okay. So before we go to what BDS will do and look like in the future, I just wanted to give you both a chance to bring in some points that have come to mind or that you wanted to bring in before we talk about the future of the movement. Anything else? Loose ends.
I think I'm good.
Okay, great. Like we said, 2005 is when BDS started. It is a call from Palestinian civil society to people of good conscience the world over to boycott, divest, and sanction the Israeli government until their demands are met for equal rights, for the right of return, for the end of illegal settlements. And that these demands have not been met, the BDS movement will go forward.
Mm-hmm. Will.
Definitely.
And we got a boost recently from Rashida Tlaib mm-hmm. from Michigan, new to Congress, and Ilhan Omar, new to Congress, is a Palestinian and a Somali woman, respectively, who said, not only do we support BDS, but the moves to try to silence us and to try to assert to mm-hmm. us and to everyone else in the process that this is unacceptable, we're pushing back against it. And by doing so, they're also giving new confidence mm-hmm. to new BDS activists or potential BDS activists to do the same and to say that the assertion that to be a part of the BDS movement, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, again, is tantamount to anti-Semitism, is absolutely incorrect. And we will continue on with our vision of fighting for human rights, regardless of how we are maligned. So I think that this is a new frontier that we should be looking forward to, because it's taken such
years.
Yeah, except for us to get here.
Yeah, and I think Rashida Tlaib is, she's organizing and like an alternative tour. So what the American Israeli Political Action Committee usually does, I think, for new Congress people and old Congress people alike, is that they take them on a tour of Israel to show how great it is. You know, it's like the only democracy in the Middle East.
Oh, dear.
And they are so progressive. What Rashida Tlaib is doing is she's doing an alternative tour. So really showing how Palestinians live their daily lives. And I think that's going to be a really great step to bring more progressive, you know, candidates mm-hmm. and people to Congress that will hopefully counteract a lot of the BDS, anti-BDS bills that we've seen this past year. And I'm looking forward to, you know, joining those campaigns.
Yeah, and so speaking of the future of BDS, the BDS movement is like the only way for it is forward, you know, and it's not only Palestinian people, and that's a very important thing.
Yeah.
Like through BDS, the PDS, the people, the activists in the BDS movement grow by learning about other struggles, like the indigenous people here in the Turtle Island, the black people struggle, and the immigrants, the border, like all of these issues. It basically, once we learn about each other, we recognize like how imperialism is affecting us as a whole. And basically, when we learn about each other's struggle, we realize how strong we are. So like one of the main icons that's been attacked recently is like Angela Davis. Been attacked by its own people.
Her hometown
in Birmingham, in the Birmingham,
Alabama,
the Birmingham Civil Society Institute, Civil Rights Institute, basically resent their honoring her with the award of like Fred L. And basically, they realize after a while that they've been shooting themselves in the foot.
Absolutely.
Because, like, Angela Davis is an icon. Like, you cannot mess with her.
That's right.
You cannot mess with
her. She beat the FBI.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on.
Like,
they didn't stand a chance.
Like, a woman with this history and this amazing energy, and you can just, like, decide to punish her for its activism, for Palestine, for her activism in Palestine. Like, she's one of the first people who supported the Palestinian BDS movement since 2005.
Yeah.
And she's still doubling down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And attacking her has proven ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
So these moments, it gives me the hope as Muhammad that the only way for us is forward. So going here in town, like, we have like the ongoing Blazers campaign against Leopold and Stevens, and also
and the contract,
and the contract, and also the city of Portland, people still working with, like, trying to further that victory and make it more effective.
Yeah.
And on the international level, like, you have, like, as you mentioned, like, congresswoman like Alexandria Cortez, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, like, basically bringing to Palestine to a mainstream.
Yeah.
And the actual shameful bill that the Congress has introduced, which is like the S1 bill that basically criminalized the action that allowed the states to punish the people who decide to boycott and divest from businesses that have relationship with the businesses and companies that contribute to the injustice treatment to the Palestinian people, and criminalize them.
Right.
This is basically a straight attack to the First Amendment, which is like the freedom of speech.
McCarthyism.
And to use that bill and introduce it as the first bill into Congress with a time that the government is shut down and so many people is suffering. That's like, want you to just like sit and think like where we are.
It exposes them.
Yeah, it's like uncover every single injustice that's going through their veins.
Yep.
So that bill thankfully did not pass, and the non-passage of that bill is a hopeful thing.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
but it also just, it speaks to like the obstacles that we're gonna face, mm-hmm. because these we had this bill that failed recently, but even before that we had another anti-BDS bill that also failed. But you also have states on, you know, like Oregon, Washington, California, and others that have introduced or will potentially introduce anti-BDS legislation. So we really need to be aware of what's happening, you know, in our state as well as others, because that affects all of us. And I think recently it was a woman in Texas. She had to sign some sort of waiver saying she wasn't going to boycott Israel.
Yeah.
And she didn't sign it, and she lost her job.
Yeah.
And so I think we really need to be aware of those obstacles moving forward, and be really practical about how we handle them.
Absolutely. So one more time for people that will support you, Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, or OFFR, and the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, please consider supporting if you do not already. Human rights must be upheld. Let's do it together. Thank you. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle. I'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye. Okay.
Listening to KBOO Portland.